We're holding on page Chof Gimel of Brachos, the beginning of the wide lines. We talked about previously that when Hashem said to Moshe, "Vayom Elisuch Haliras Esponai," so we had two opinions on it. We had Rabbi Shur ben Kocha saying that it was that Moshe missed the opportunity by the Sneh. He should have taken the opportunity to look directly at the Shechina, and he would have then he would have made that he and other Nevi'im even in the future would be able to see the presence of Hashem. But he missed the opportunity. He didn't. We mentioned also. But Rommel Friedman mentioned the point from Iyun Yaakov that Hashem was saying that when I was appearing at the Sneh, instead of you worrying about, and Hashem is telling Moshe, instead of you worrying about that I'm not worthy of seeing Hashem's presence, your first thought should have been right away davening for the Jewish people to be taken out of Golos. So therefore he missed the opportunity. Then on the other hand, we had Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amar Rav Yonasan, said on the contrary, in the Sechar, that the three aspects of why Moshe didn't look at the Shechina there by the Sneh, which are expressed in the Pesukim over there, in the Sechar of that, he was Zoich of the three aspects of closeness to Hashem, where he himself had his face shining with rays of light from Hashem, and that Dibur Hashem al Moshe upon him upon him. So now the Mechaber of Ein Yaakov brought in here a piece from Shmos Rabba, a piece from Medrash Rabba that expands on this a little bit. The Gemara said the Medrash says Rabbi Yeshua ben Kolcha v'Rab Hoshia, page Chof Gimel. Rabbi Yeshua ben Kolcha v'Rab Hoshia. Echad me'emoyim, between Rabbi Yeshua ben Kolcha and Rab Hoshia, one of them says. And from the Gemara, B'Pashtos, it would be Rabbi Yeshua ben Kocha is the one who says the first one. Lo yofa osa Moshe k'shehistir ponav. Moshe did not do right by hiding his face at the Sneh. Shirululay, the histir ponav, had he not hidden his face, gilulay akadosh baruch hu Moshe, malamaylo, malamata, umasha hoyo, umasha osad liyas. Then Hashem would have revealed to him what's above, meaning above the rakia, that's above the chayis hakodesh, what's below, as in below the earth, what was in the past, what there was, or what level of lacus there was before the world was created, what there will be in the future. But in the end, he missed that. Over Seif, Victor Shaliris, in the end, Moshe did want to see all of that. Shenema Hareni Noes Kvedecha, as Moshe says, show me your glory. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. Ani Bosi Laharis L'Chalponim. I wanted to show you my face. V'Yiskarta Panecha, and you hid your face. Achshav, Ani Omer L'Chalki L'Yani Hadu Machoi. Now I'm telling you that no person can see me and live. In other words, when I wanted to do it, you didn't want it. So therefore, you missed the opportunity. So that was the same as we had Rabbi Yisroel ben Kocha had said in the Gemara. Which again, you know, we said, Maharsha says, not that we're saying that Moshe did an Avera by that, but we're saying that he missed the opportunity. If even Moshe is not capable of looking at the Shechina, then certainly no other Navi is. And therefore, he would have made it possible, potentially, for other Navim to be able to, but if even he wouldn't, then yet. But Rab Hoshia Rabba, on the other hand, Rab Hoshia Rabba says, on the contrary, Yofa Osa Moshe Shehistir Ponov. Moshe did good I skipped a few lines actually. The Amr Rabbi Shor Besichnin B'Shem Rab Levi Afal Piken Heroloi B'Schar VaYaster Moshe Ponov B'Dibur Hashem Moshe Ponov Upon Him. Nevertheless, Rabbi Shor Besichnin says in the name of Rab Levi Afal Piken Heroloi Nevertheless, Hashem did show him a tremendous Gilui Hakus B'Schar VaYaster Moshe Ponov B'Dibur Hashem Moshe Ponov Upon Him. In the Schar that he hid his face, in return for that, he was able to speak to Hashem face to face, which no other Navi was, or Bishar Kiyore, and since the Pasuk says that he's afraid to daze at the Shechina, in the S'chus of that, therefore the other Jewish people were afraid to look at him, or Bishar Mehabit, and in the S'char of the fact that he didn't want to look, then as the Pasuk says, he gets to see the image of Hashem, so to speak. So this is the same thing that we said that the Shmuel ben Achmeni said in the Gemara. So in other words, according to that, it would come out. Now, Eitz Yosef points out, before what we said was Rabbi Shmuel ben Kocha and Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni disagreeing. According to Rabbi Shmuel ben Kocha, it was all negative what Moshe did. On the other hand, what Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni is saying, it was all positive. Now Rabbi Shmuel Desichnin is kind of taking a middle ground. It wasn't the best thing. Moshe could have done better. Nevertheless, he still got sire for what he did do, that he gained these three things. That's we're going to get to now. We're going to get to now in the quotation from the Medrash. The last words of it here, Rav Hoshia Rabba.
Okay.
Rav Hoshia Rabba Omer, Yofa Osa Moshe Shehistir Ponim. On the contrary, Moshe did the exact right thing by hiding his face. So Hashem, therefore, in effect, says to Moshe, I was going to show you my presence, the chalakta li covered, and instead you showed me great respect, and you hid your face. Therefore, Hashem says, Chayecha, I swear by your life, you are in the future going to be by Har Sinai together with me for 40 days and 40 nights and not eating and drinking. So you're going to be on a level beyond the human being. And Hashem says, you will enjoy during those 40 days, you'll enjoy the radiance of the Shekhinah, and in other words, that will serve instead of food and drink. As we find that Moshe didn't even know that his face was luminous from the rays of light of the Shekhinah. But on the other hand, let's contrast with what happened when Nadav and Avihu and the other Skenim, when they were up on Har Sinai, they uncovered their heads, which is in general, you know, nowadays we wear a yarmulke, but even in the olden times, it wasn't necessarily that people wore yarmulkes on a day-to-day basis, but there was an idea that you cover your head in the presence of somebody who's greater than you. The story in the Medrash, for example, where Rabbi Akiva is sitting with a couple of the other chachamim, and a boy walks by them with his head bare, and one of them says he must be a mamzer, and the other one says he must be a ben anida, and Rabbi Akiva says he's both, because a chutzpah yach like that, it has to be there's something the matter with his conception. So in a similar vein, we're saying over here that Nadav and Avihu uncovered their heads. In other words, they didn't consider that they have to act in the presence of the Shekhinah in a respectful way and keep their heads covered.
Are you on the bottom of page?
Now we're in the middle of page 46. We went further.
46?
Yeah. So as none of Avir Porodoshehim, the Zonue Nehem Zivashina, and they feasted their eyes on the radiance of the Shekhinah. So Moshe was saying, received the radiance of the Shekhinah, and he didn't even know it. It made his face luminous, and he didn't even know it. But Nadav and Avihu looked at it and enjoyed it. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says that Hashem did not stretch his hand against the nobles of Bnei Israel. And who are the nobles? Nadav and Avihu. Behem, like Kovlu, Amasha Asu. And they didn't even complain. They didn't even feel bad afterwards for what they had done. They didn't realize that they had treated the Shekhinah in a disrespectful way. We have to realize, of course, you know, I'm going to talk about Nadav and Avihu. They were on a great level. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Aaron later that they're even in a way greater than me and you because the Kirei Vayakadosh Hashem chose them to make the example. But nevertheless, we're saying on their level, compared to what was expected of them, they treated the Shekhinah a little too casually, which Moshe was careful not to. So that's it. So that's the quotation from Medrash Rabbah that bears on our Gemara and supplements it. Going back to now Moshe's discussion with Hashem, where he wants to, and Hashem tells him, so Hashem says, you'll be standing in the cleft of the rock in the cave over there, and I'll cover you with my hand. And then Hashem says, I will remove my hand, and you will see the back of me. So what is the back? Omer of Chama Babizna, Omer of Shimon Chasidah, Melamed Shehera, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Tesher Shal Tefillin. That teaches us that Hashem showed Moshe the knot of the tefillin. Now, we learned a little not so far back that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Maniach Tefillin. We talked about Parshias that are in Hashem's tefillin. So HaKosef brings over here from the Rashba, who in turn brings from Abhai Goin, that We said there, the same way, what does it mean that Hashem puts on tefillin? So Rabbi Goin had explained it the same way as we say, for example, Hashem showed Moshe the form of the menorah, because otherwise he couldn't understand it, and showed him how the Mishkan is supposed to be put together, because otherwise he couldn't understand it. So he showed him how tefillin are supposed to be made, because otherwise he wouldn't understand, and so he also showed him how the tefillin are supposed to be put on the head, and how the knot is going to be made, which the knot, when you get down to it, is kind of complicated to make, so Hashem would have had to show Moshe an example of it. However, the Rashba himself goes on to say, and Akosev brings it that on a deeper level, what it means is when we talk about, so we said previously that Hashem's tefillin represents the fact that he's close with us Jewish people, that he has kaviyachol a reciprocal relationship with us. Now Hashem also relates to the rest of the world, so the Hashem's relationship to the rest of the world can be described in terms of the knot of tefillin, the same way as a knot joins two things together. The same way Hashem, that in that way Hashem has a connection with the rest of the world. that surrounds Hashem's head and is tied with a knot. So when Hashem is showing Moshe the Kesher Shel Tefillin, it means that Hashem is showing how everything in the world depends on and is connected to Elikos. So that's what we say Achorai, because we're talking about to the knot of the Tefillin Shorosh, which is on the back of the head. So that's what Moshe was able to see. So he's not able to see, in other words, the full Gilui Elikos, but he's able to see, in a certain sense, like how Hashem, how Elikos connects with the world. And we had not so long ago in Tanya, and you get a good test, where they're brought there from the Arizal, that Moshe's Hasaga only went as far as the Acharayim, as far as Netzach Hod Yisod Malchus, because you have the Chachamim, the Chachmei HaKabbalah, are able to understand much higher things, but not actually perceive them. Moshe actually perceived them, so that's also connected with the idea that those lower four spheres, Netzach Hod Yisod and Malchus, as the Alter Rebbe explains of there, those are the ones that actually relate to the worlds below it, which is what we're dealing with over here. Like the Rashba is saying, the knot represents how Hashem is connected with the world below. Next, we're in the middle of mentioning a bunch of statements from Rabbi Yochanan. So here's another one. Miyom Shabara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Asa Olam. Ever since Hashem created the world, Lo Haya Adam Shekarei LaKadosh Baruch Hu Adon, there was no person who ever called Hashem by the name Adon. Ad Shabar Avraham B'Kroi Adon, until Avraham came and he was the first one to call Hashem by the name Adon. Now, the point is, first of all, Tosfos says, I mean, before that they were using the Shem Havaya. And we pronounce the Shem Havaya as Adonai, but they may have actually pronounced the Yudke Vavke, but whatever the case, here we're talking about how it's written in the Torah, when it's written Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, the first time we find that is in connection with Avraham. And the idea behind it, Marashah says, is the name Adonai represents that Hashem is the master of the world. That's what the word Adonai means. Literally means my Lord. So it means that Hashem is Lord over the world, and Hashem controls, and Hashem can change things in the world as He sees fit. Which was when he uses the expression Vayishenema Vayomer Adonai Elokim B'Moed Yakir Hashena. He says, "How will I know that I will inherit Eretz Yisrael?" So that's in other words that so Avraham was the first one to recognize and to teach the world that Hashem. It's not just that Hashem created the world, but that Hashem actually is involved with the world on an ongoing basis, and that Hashem can change anything He wants in the world at any time. There is actually a medrash that says that Hashem asked Adam, after Adam had named all the animals, so Hashem says to Adam, what should your name be? And he says, my name should be Adam, because I was created from Adama. And then Hashem says, what do you think my name should be? And Adam says, your name should be Adonai, because you're Adam and you're the master of the whole world. But nevertheless, we don't find it written in the pasuk. And in fact, there's a minor someplace where I think that Rebbe Rashab talks about that it still may mean that Adam used that together with the name Yudke Vavke, whereas again, here we're talking about by itself as Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. Nobody before Avraham did that, or at least publicized that to the world. Tosfos, by the way, points out that this pasuk Vayema Adonai Elokim B'Moed Yakir Hashena, a few psukim earlier in the same perek, you have also Avraham uses the name Adonai. By Yomai, it says Adonai Elokim Matitim Levon Eshehel Chariri. You're telling me Schor Chagri Ma'od, you have a tremendously great reward, but what good is it if I don't have any children? So why isn't the Gemara bringing that earlier possible? So Tosfos goes into a bit of discussion that those two sections are not Ein Muktumum Ocha BaTorah. There's no things in Torah are often out of chronological order. And here what we have is, so you have in Bereishis, in Perek Tesvav, you have there, so you have like this Perek Yudalad was the story of the war with the four kings. Right after that, Hashem tells Maltira Avram, and then you have the couple of psukim over there, ending with then you have, after that comes the story of the Bris Bein Absarim. Tosfos explains that actually the Bris Bein Absarim came earlier. Tosfos brings, actually Rashi on the psukim also brings, that like this, the Bris Bein Absarim was when Avraham was 70 years old. Because, and we know that because Hashem told him that, Hashem told him at the time, which the 400 years count, we know from when Yitzchak was born, by Yitzias Mitzrayim, the pasuk says that was 430 years. So where's the extra 30 years from the Bris Bein Absarim, which happened when Abraham was 70 until Yitzchak was born is 30 years, and then you have the other 400. So therefore we see the Bris Bein Absarim happened when Abraham was 70. Now, meanwhile, now you first have Avraham first permanently moved to Eretz Yisrael when he was 75. So the idea would be, in other words, that already at 70 he had visited Eretz Yisrael, then was the Bris Ben Avsarim, then he traveled back to Haran, and at 75 Hashem told him make a clean break with the place and don't go back there again, which he never did. Meanwhile, Tosfos calculates that the war with the four kings happened when Avraham was 73. And Tosfos makes it that we don't have the calculation here in, we don't have the calculation here in the Tosfos as printed in Ein Yaakov, it's in the Gemara. But Tosfos explains, if you look at the Pesukim there in Perek Yud-Dalet, where it describes how originally Sdoim and the other cities over there were subject to Kedor La'omer and the other kings over there, and then for a certain number of, for 12 years they were subject, and 13 years they rebelled, and in the 14th year Kedor La'omer came and defeated them in battle. So if you calculate that, so you come out that from the Dor HaFloga until then, and from the Dor HaFloga until then had been 27 years. So therefore, the Dor HaFloga happened, 25 years rather. So, the Dor HaFloga happened when Avraham was 48. So 48 and another 25 brings us to 73. So therefore, Avraham was, so in short, Tosfos says the chronology is the Bris Ben Avsarim was when Avraham was 70. The war with the four kings was when Avraham was 73. And then that's when Hashem told him, Anochi Mogin Moch. Meanwhile, 3 years earlier, had already been with the Bris Ben Avsarim. And 2 years after that is when Hashem told Avraham, Lech Lecha, leave Haran, and don't ever return. So Tosfos says, that's why the Gemara is bringing the positive at Bamo Edaki Irashena, because in fact, that happened earlier, even though it's written in the Pesukim later. The Tzlach, actually, the Tzlach, the Noda Yehuda, gives a different reason. He says, in the Uriah Postik, where he says, Vayyemer Adna Elikim Matitan Li, so Avraham is saying, I'm my mazel is that I'm going to be infertile, and Hashem Vayyotso Isa Achotza, Hashem takes him out and lifts him above the stars and shows him that you're beyond that, a mazel Yisrael. So fine, that kind of thing, the idea that Hashem controls what's going on in the heavens, fine. There were Goyim who believed that concept and those that who believed in that concept also. But here we're talking about when he says Abamo Edaki Roshana, he's talking about the concept of Schar Va'onesh. That was something that Abraham introduced to the world that didn't know of it before. Therefore, the Gemara brings that pasuk because the Gemara wants to focus on the pasuk where Abraham is using the name Adonai to represent that Hashem runs the world as far as Schar Va'onesh, which we hadn't found before that. Anyway, so Abraham was the first to do that. That's something else, that Rashi explains on the Pesukim over there, that when Hashem appeared to the others and made them promises, he used the name Kel Shakai, he didn't use the name Havaya, because the name Havaya implies that Hashem is the one who keeps his promises, and he wasn't yet going to keep the promises in the times of the others. But here we're talking about the name that Avraham used to address Hashem. In Perek Tesvav, you have as the first times when Avraham uses the name Adonai to address Hashem. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rab, Af Daniel, Leinene El Bashvil Avraham. In fact, Daniel, 1,000 years later, was answered in his tefillah only in the source of Avraham. Shenemar, he said this pasuk over and over again on Yom Kippur. But after Shmael Akenu Al Tulas Abdullah Bagaim of El Tachanunav, Hashem, please listen to the tefillah of your servant, meaning his own tefillah, the El Tachanunav, and to his pleas, Bahar Panecha Mekdoshcha Shamim, and let your face shine on your desolate Beis Hamikdash and have it rebuilt. Laman Adonai, for the sake of Adonai. Now the question is Laman Chomi, by the way. The whole rest of the pasuk is in second person. So the whole tefillah is in second person. We say it in Vohurachim. Va'ata Hashem alakeinu asher etzesa as amcha Yisrael me'eretz Yitzchak biyad chazaka. Etc. We have 4 or 5 psukim over there that we quote from Daniel's tefillah, and all of them are addressed to Hashem in second person. Why all of a sudden Laman Adonai? Why not Laman Chomi? Ella, he means Laman Avraham Shekracha Adon. For the sake of Avraham, who was the first one to call you Adon, please listen to my tefillah. And he was answered, and Hashem sent him a malach to clarify to him the whole thing was over there that Daniel was very worried. He thought 70 years of Golus Babel are over and the Bais Hamikdash hasn't been built yet. What's going on? And Hashem sent a malach to clarify to him what's going on, and that the second Bais Hamikdash will be built and eventually will be destroyed, and then there'll be a Gula Mikdash later. The Yad Mamash. Continues the Gemara. But Amar Rav Yechon and Meshum Rav Shimon Yechoi, Mi Yoyim Shabara Akkadosh Baruch Hu Eseh Lomoi, ever since Hashem created the. I meant to mention actually, Iyun Yaakov points out another interesting angle on the fact that Avraham was the first one to call Hashem Adonai. The title Adonai for Hashem also implies, besides we were saying that it means Hashem runs the world and Hashem gives reward and punishment, specifically also there's a medrash that says that the name Adonai represents the one who has the right to throw out one set of tenants who are living on a property and bring in a different set of tenants, which is what Hashem did when he brought the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael and throughout the Canaanim. And in fact, the name Adonai is used repeatedly in Sefer Yoshua there in the story when they're crossing the Yarden. So therefore, so Avraham is using that name Adonai in connection with that Hashem is promising Avraham to throw out Canaanim and give the Jewish people Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, he used the name Adonai, and therefore Daniel also, 1,000 years later, is davening, Hashem, you threw us out of the land, but please give it back to us. After all, you promised it to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Therefore, he's saying, Laman Adonai, in the schus of Avraham, who first recognized you as the Adonai, as the one who determines who lives in a land. So the Gemara continues, ever since Hashem created the world, there was never a person who thanked Hashem. Meaning, now you had people who blessed Hashem. For example, you have Noach, Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem. You have people daven to Hashem, etc. But nobody ever said a concept of thank you to Hashem. In other words, that I got more than I deserve. Until Leah came, and she was the first one to express that sense of gratitude to Hashem. As she said, when she gave birth to Yehuda, she said, now I will thank Hashem. Rashi brings over here, and also on the Pasuk, that she, the Imohis had Ruach HaKodesh. They knew that Yaakov is destined to have 12 sons, and she already has, so she figured each of the four wives is going to wind up having three. She already had the fourth one, so she realized I have more than my fair share, and therefore she says, "Apam oydas Hashem." So this kind of thing that a person should realize that not just Hashem gave them, but Hashem gave them more than they expected and more than they deserved. Leah was the first one to recognize that concept and to acknowledge Hashem for it. In fact, it's brought that that's one reason why are we Jewish people called specifically after Shevet Yehuda? So, okay, the Balabatish reason is because most of us are descended from Shevet Yehuda because the 10 Shvatim went into Golos and Binyamin was a small Shevet. But the deeper idea of it is because we Jewish people have, we represent in the world and we have that concept of thanking Hashem for what we have and recognizing that it's more than we deserve. The Rashba brings over here actually he brings a mushal on it from the Medrash that there was a Kohen who goes to the granary and the Balabas gives him truma, and the Kohen is not particularly thankful for it because like what do you expect? Then somebody else gives him a small handful of cholin, and the Kohen is very very grateful to him. So the Balabas asks why. And the Kohen says because you gave me my portion. The truma you gave me is what I'm supposed to be getting anyway. So there's nothing particularly for me to be thankful for. This other guy gave me cholin of his own that he didn't have to. Therefore, I'm extra grateful. So Leah felt the same.
What's cholin again?
Cholin is non kodesh food. So after truma and maaser and everything have been taken out, the rest of the food is cholin. Now somebody went and gave that voluntarily to the kohen, and therefore he's extra grateful. So Leah felt the same way that if I had only had three sons, then fine, that would be what I expected, and there's no particular thanks for that. She would bless Hashem for that, etc., but not thanks, which implies for more than what she expected to get. Now instead, when Yehuda was born, then she expressed that concept. So since we're talking about Leah and the names for her children, so the Gemara explains Reuben. Why did she name her first son Reuben? Now, of course, in the pasuk you have, she says, Ki ra Hashem ba'oni, that Hashem saw my affliction and my pain. Ki ato ye'avani, Yishina, my husband, will love me to the same degree that he does Leah. But still, the Gemara is bothered by the fact that, so different Mephoshim talk about a number of things why the Gemara finds it necessary to darshan a different meaning that she had in the name. There's a Rashi Sichan and also in Chelik Yud, because Rashi brings it on the Pasuk, so of course the Rebbe has to explain why is it necessary Apu Pshat to explain it. But, for example, Marsha says over here, the question is, if it was just Ra Hashem Ba'oni, that explains the Ra'u part, but not the Bain part, or for the name should have been just Ra'a. Or Ra'a Ba'an, or Ra'a Be'ain, or something. When also why re'u in the plural? Why not re'evein? And so on and so forth. Also, for example, we find by each of the other shvatim, you find that they say a reason and then it says the name. By Shimon, for example, she says ki shama Hashem kisnu anochi v'tikra shmo Shimon. And the same thing by Levi, after you love Ishi Eli, and then therefore he was named Levi, and so on and so forth. Each time we have the reason first. By Reuven, we have something else. V'tikra shmo Reuven ki omra. So therefore, that implies that she had a private reason for naming him Reuven, and then the reason that she told everybody else is Ra'a Hashem Ba'an. So what is that private reason? So Amr Abul Yezer, or Alazar, Amr Alayah Ru'u Ma Ben Bni Leben Chom. Take a look at the difference between my son, she had Ruach HaKodesh, she's perceiving the future. Come see the difference between my son and the son of my father-in-law, my brother-in-law, Esau. The Ilu Ben Chomi. Now let's consider what happened with Esav. Afagav Demidaite Zabna Lebchirose. Now when he sold his Bechira, it was voluntary. He didn't have to sell it to Yaakov at the time. People, by the way, always bring up the point, yeah, but wasn't he starving? And yet Yaakov took advantage of him. But no, you see clearly from the Psukim that Yaakov gave him Lechem on the Zid Adoshim. And even afterwards, Vayivaz Esav as a Bechira, he made fun of the whole thing and said it's not important. So he was in no danger and he gave it up completely voluntarily. And in fact, some of the Meforshim on the Pasuk say that the Nezid Adoshim wasn't even the price of it. He paid, Yaakov actually paid him good money for it. The Nezid Adoshim was just kind of the sealed deal. Anyway, so he did it completely voluntarily. Chozi Maksive, and see what happened eventually. By Yistem Esav as Yaakov. Esav resented Yaakov. Uchtiv, and then earlier you have Vayim Hachi Koroshma Yaakov. Isn't it appropriate that he was named Yaakov by Yaakveni Zepha Amayim Begomer? He outsmarted me twice with the Bechorda and now with the Brachas. So even though he had given away the Bechorda voluntarily, sold the Bechorda voluntarily, he still resented Yaakov for it and was ready to kill him over it. The Ilu Bni, but now Leah is saying, as opposed to my son, Reuven, even though it was against Reuven's will that Yosef took away the Bechorah from him. As the Pasuk says, when Reuven desecrated his father's bed, as we know the whole story, that he moved Yaakov's bed from Bilhah's tent into Leah's, he said, because he was sticking up for Leah, it's not right that Bilhah, who's the Shifcha of Rachel, should be my mother's rival. So because of that, Nikna Bechorosa to Yosef, because of that, his Bechorah was given to Yosef. So you would think that Reuven should be resentful of Yosef, his younger brother, his next to youngest brother, has taken the Bechorah away from him. Nevertheless, he wasn't jealous of him. When the other brothers were ready to kill Yosef, Reuven heard about it and he saved them from their hands. So now, many years earlier, Leah is expressing that by naming her son Reuven. So that explains why the Bain, why the Re'u, and so on and so forth. In the Sicha, the Rebbe also talks about the idea that, the Imaris were not Nevi'os per se, except for Sarah is listed as one of the seven Nevi'os. The rest of the Imaris are not listed as Nevi'os. They had Ruach HaKodesh, but that's not the same thing. But the Rebbe explains on a Pshat level anyway what it is when Reuven is born, so she's saying, now my husband will love me more. But she has to think to herself, why? Is this son necessarily going to be growing up to be that great that Yaakov should now have more affection to me, his mother, because of that? What if he turns out to be another Esau? So already now, when he was born, she perceived that this is going to be a different kind of person than Esau. So right away now, so she may not have expressed in so many words what we're saying over here, but she already could perceive that this child, this Bechor, is going to be a different kind of Bechor than Esau was, and he's not going to, and as we're saying, as we're teaching out in the Gemara over here, he's not going to end up resenting his younger brother the way that Esau did. So she had a degree of Ruach HaKodesh, not maybe enough just to realize the entire, the Rebbe seems to explain in the Sicha over there, not necessarily that she perceived all these details, but at least that at the time she could perceive this is not the kind of baby that, like Esav, where he's going to wind up having those kinds of needs. Since we're talking about the significance of, and in fact, Maosha actually says over here that she wasn't a Nevi'ah, but so Hashem put these words into her mouth and she was able to perceive the future even if she didn't know it clearly. So So the Gemara, since we're talking about the significance of names, we're talking about the significance of Reuben's name, so the Gemara gives another example. Rus. What about we have the name Rus. My Rus. What's the significance of the name Rus? And again, there's a lot of different explanations about why the Gemara is picking on Rus specifically. Marsha actually in Bava Basra, where it asks the same thing, says the question is not on the person Rus, but rather on the name of the Sefer Rus. Why was the Sefer? Fine, she's the heroine of the story, but still, there are other major figures in the story as well. The Megillah could have been named after, or it could have been named, you know, ultimately one reason why the Sefer was written anyway is because the Yichus of David, so it could have been called Megillas Yichus David or something. Why is it named specifically Rus? But different other Mephoshim talk about what the significance is of why the Gemara is picking Davka on Rus. One of them is, for example, Eitz Yosef brings that actually brings from Medrash HaNe'elam, which is part of the Zohar, that actually she had an original Goyish name. He brings that her original name as a Goyta was Gilis. Then when Machlon wanted to marry her and converted her, then she took the new name Rus. So the question is then why Machlon gave her the new name Rus? Other Mephoshim say the other way around. Other Mephoshim say that Rus was in fact her original Goyish name. So the question is, why did she retain that as her name when she became a Geyurtis rather than taking a proper Jewish name? Or Anaf Yosef says another point also. We know one significance of the name Rus, it's Gematria 606, which represents the extra number of mitzvahs that she got when she became a Geyurtis. Before that, she had 7 mitzvahs made, yeah? Now she's got 613, so the difference is 606. But then why the letter is Dafka in that order, Resh Vav Saf? If it's just for the Gematria, she could have been called Tav Resh Vav. So different Mephoshim have different explanations of what the Gemara is after with this question. Anyway, Amar Rav Yechanan, she zochs of Yotzim, then a David. The answer is that she had this chus that David descended from her, Shavi Vohu Lakhodesh Baruch Hu B'shiras V'tishvachas. He, so to speak, watered Hashem. He slaked Hashem's thirst with Shiras V'tishvachas, so therefore Rus is Meloshin Revoy. David HaMelech himself says, Kosi Revoy. So that's why she had that name, Rus. And the Gemara asks the Manolon de Shmogarim, Bechlal, where do we see this concept that a person's name has an effect on what kind of person they become? And the answer is Amar Abeliezer or Olazer, the Amakra, Luchu Chazu Mifalei Hashem, go and see the accomplishments of Hashem, Asher Som Shamois Ba'aretz, that Hashem put desolation in the world. So why are we praising her? Why are we praising Hashem for desolation? I'll typically Shamos Ela Shemos. So don't read Shamos desolation, but Shemos names. So Hashem gives parents a degree of Ruach HaKodesh when they name their child, that therefore it has to do with what kind of person the child ends up becoming. Obviously, you know, he still has the Chira Chavshis, and every name, in fact, there's a Medrash that says sometimes you have people whose names have a very ugly connotation, but they end up doing tremendous, amazing things, and gives examples, and vice versa. So the point is, the name has a certain effect on the course of the person's life, as in the examples that the Gemara is giving over here. The mayor, we know, was Dayak Mishma. He was particularly careful to look after a person's name, and he could tell the person's personality from it. Right. But even the other Chacham who didn't do that, they still knew it has a certain effect. They just didn't. They weren't as Medayak in it as Reb Meir was. But yeah. Onward. V'omer Rav Yechon and Mishum Rav Yosi. Kol dibur v'dibur shiyotzim v'piyakadosh baruch hu l'toyva. Whenever Hashem let out something from his mouth, kaviyachol, for good, afilo al tnai, even if it was on a condition, loy chazar by Hashem did not retract it, and Hashem still fulfilled what he said. Menalon mi Moshe Rabbeinu. We see this from Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenem, Hashem tells him, "Heref mi many vashnidim, leave me alone and let me destroy them." After the Chet Egel, the Emches Shemam, I will wipe out their name. The Es Oischal Goy Otzim Varav mi menu, I'll make you into a nation that's more numerous and large than them. Now, what happened? Va'achagav the boy Moshe Rachmi Allah de Milsa. Now Moshe had asked for Rachmanis from Hashem over the matter, Ubitva, and he cancelled it. And Hashem Vaynocham Hashem, and Hashem retracted what he was going to do. Afapikin, Afilo Hochi Oit Mevizano. Nevertheless, Hashem made it come true with his children. Now, Akosev points out over here that on the face of it, we do sometimes have where. We have many times actually where Hashem promises something on a t'nai, and if the t'nai doesn't come true, then the good is not going to come true either. For example, you have the for example, you have in the brachas of flawless. Hashem promises that if you listen to the Torah, then you'll have such and such brachas. And if they don't, then they won't. So they didn't, and therefore they don't have the brachas. So we have many times when Hashem promises something on a condition, and if the condition doesn't happen. So he explains over here that therefore the Gemara carefully chose which pasuk to bring because the pasuk. If you look carefully at that passage, it's not saying a t'nai. I mean, the Gemara is calling it al t'nai because that's what it was meant as, but it's not phrased as a t'nai. It's not saying, if I wipe them out, then I will make you into a greater and more numerous nation. Hashem is saying two separate things. Let me destroy them, and you're worried about what's going to happen to the bris with the others. I'll make you a greater nation. So in other words, it's not really a condition. It's more, why is Hashem to begin with telling Moshe, I'm going to wipe them out? So as we know, that was in order to motivate Moshe to daven for them, realizing when Hashem is telling him, leave me alone, Hashem is hinting, and if you don't leave me alone, then I won't destroy them. So therefore, that gave Moshe the opening to start davening for them. But now, nevertheless, when Hashem had said, the way Hashem phrased it, it wasn't actually dependent on the condition. It was rather an independent statement. So therefore, we're saying that had to come true regardless. So even though the first half of the statement didn't come true and Hashem did not wipe out the Jewish people, nevertheless, Hashem kept the second half of the statement because he hadn't explicitly phrased it as if this, then this. As opposed to, for example, in the Barachas of Flawless, where you have more explicitly, im b'chokoy setelechu, then the nasati gishmei from the itzal. So Shenema, as the pasuk says in Divrei Hayomim, uvnei Moshe Gershom v'Eliezer, Moshe, as we know, had the two sons, Gershom and Eliezer, Eliezer had a son named Rechaviah who was the leader of his family. And then the pasuk continues, the children of Rechaviah multiplied upward tremendously. And what does that mean? The word Lamaila means that their number, the descendants of Rechaviah, were exceeded 600,000, which is the number of adult male Jews that there were at the time of Chateg. And we know that, Asi Revia Revia. We know that by Exeter Shabbat on the word Ravu. Ksivacha Ravu Lamailo Chtivasim, Ponu Vayishvatsu Vayu. So the same way as the Jewish people in Mitzrayim multiplied and ended up being 600,000 adult men, the same way Rechaviah's descendants did the same thing. So therefore, that's what we're saying. The bracha for Moshe was Mekuyim through his grandson Rechaviah. That particular branch of the family had the bracha and they grew tremendously large. Let's do one more paragraph. We have time. When a person has a bad child who grows up in his household, that is worse than Mochemes Gogomog. We find that David writes a capital Tillim when he was running away from Avshalom. Hashem mor rabut sora, and he's saying, Hashem, how great are my enemies? How hard a time I'm having? Rabim komim aloy, many people are standing up against me. What am I going to do? And the ilu gavim mochemes gogomogig. See, the previous capital Tillim is talking about mochemes gogomogig, and it says lama rog shugoyim. Why are the nations making noise? Ula umim yergurik, and the peoples are speaking nothingness. In other words, like he says on it, like lama, like why are they even bothering? It's nothing. As opposed to when Avshalom is attacking him, then he considers it a bit. Then he considers a big thing. In fact, Maharsha says the word marabu sarai, the word rabu itself, can be related to the word tarbus, which means, in other words, like this, you have Avshalom was a no good Nick. Later on, the pasuk mentions that there was Adon Yahu also, but Oysa Yolda Achre Avshalom, that he was also a son of David, and he was also a no good Nick and followed in Avshalom's ways. So now he's saying marabu sarai, what saris I have from the rabu, from the children who were raised bad. And he continues, Rabin Komim Aloy, meaning that you have, because of that, you have many other enemies of David, then start sorting up with him, Achitofel, and Shimi Achitofel, who advised badly against him, and Shimi Ben Gera, who cursed him, and so forth. So we see, in other words, so the evil, Mor Rabut Sarai, like Sim, when it comes to Mochamas Gogomog, he's not saying anything like Mor Rabut Sarai. What are they doing? Big deal, if nothing. As opposed to Avshalom, he considers a big thing. So the Gemara asks, by the way, Mizmor le David bevorchem emtav shalom b'nai. That Kapitel Gimel is saying Mizmor le David, a song by David when he's running away from Avshalom. Mizmor le David, kina le David b'bayle. Shouldn't he be writing it as a dirge, as a song of mourning that he's in such a situation? Amr of Shimon ben Yechoyu ben Avishalom l'mahad David doma. What is the spike? For Adam sheyotzal of shtarchoiv, a person has an IOU against him that he owes somebody money. Kodim shapro hayotziv. So before he pays it off, he's sad because he doesn't know if he's going to be able to manage. La'achas shapro sameach. After he pays it off, he's happy. Afkan, the same thing over here. David, Afkan David, the same situation we have here with David. Kivin sha'amulay akadosh baruch hu hinini make him alacha rami beisrecha. After the story with Bathsheba. With Bathsheba and Uriah and all, so Hashem says nothing. So Hashem sends Nathan and Avi to tell David off for it, and he tells him Hashem says that I'm gonna raise up against you evil from your own house. So Hayotziv. So David was always worried about it. Om Hashemet Shemet Everday Manzu. What if from my household can mean from any of the people, any of the servants, any of the whatever in my household? So it could be a slave, it could be a mamzer. Dolei Chai is alive. They're not gonna have Rachmanus on me. Given the Chaza Avshalom, Avshalom, who once he saw in the end, what is this Rami Besecha, is that Avshalom, his own son, rebelled against him, Samach, so David was happy, Mishum Hachi, he's happy, realizing that after all, first, Avshalom is his son, and as bad as he is, as much of a no good nick as he is, he's still going to have Rachmanus on his father. So in fact, Maharsha says, I mean, in the end, in the Psukim over there, you don't really find that Avshalom had much Rachmanus on David. He was willing to listen to a plan of Achitofel's to send a strike force to wipe out David all of a sudden. Nevertheless, though, David didn't know that. He figured Avshalom would have a certain Rachmanis on him. He certainly had on Avshalom. When Avshalom was killed, he was devastated. And actually, the truth is, the Malbim brings on the Psukim over there. He analyzes the story over there more carefully and says that Avshalom himself was not really, Achitofel was definitely out to get David and he didn't mind seeing him dead. Avshalom wasn't really so sure about that, which is why the Psukim describe over there that after he listened to Achitofel's advice, he still wanted to hear other advice from Kushai Aoki, and that advice eventually saved David. So Avshalom himself was not so quick to say that he wants David dead. So therefore, David himself was happy. Mishum Hochi, Omar Mizmer. So therefore, he called it a Mizmer, a song. Omar, he says to himself, Stambro, Rochma Laba. Usually, a son has Rachmanus on his father, and therefore, in other words, Hashem is, so to speak, letting me off easy. Okay. Akhetoko was actually Bathsheba's great grandfather. Yeah. That's one reason why he had it in for David. Yeah. Actually, grandfather, I should say. He was her grandfather. Her father was Eliam, and Eliam was the son of Akhetoko. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Yud Aleph Tishrei Gotz Nomin. When it comes to sprinkling the parah drumah la'asid lavei, the pasuk says, "V'zerachti aleichem mayim torah mataratim," I'll sprinkle pure water on you, and you'll be purified. Meaning that the sprinkling will be accomplished by Hashem Himself. So we see then the greatness of the Jewish people. Like we have the expression in Masecht Yoma at the end of the Masecht, "Ashreichem Yisrael lifnei miyatim mataratim," before whom are you becoming torah? Mi matar eschem, who is purifying you? Avichem shebashmayim, your own father in heaven. And the Rebbe continues, you look at the expression lifnei miyatim matarim, that's like when we say lifnei habayit tatoru, where lifnei means not only in front of, but it means beyond. So when we say lifnei habayit tatoru, it means that we go beyond Shem Havaya. So the same thing over here, we're talking about the tatoru of the Jewish people is even higher than the Shem Havaya. That's the expression lifnei miyatim matarim. And in the same vein, it explains in Siddus the reason why today is called Gotz Namin, because Yom Kippur is Lifnei Avaya, is higher than Avaya, and therefore the next day has no specific name. It's just called Gotz Namin. We're continuing on the Halachas of Macholos Asuris. So we started talking about Basa B'Cholov. If you have two Jews who know each other, even if they're careful not to eat, even if they're picky, and even if they're machbid on each other, and one will not take from the other one's food, still they're not allowed to eat one meat and the other milk at the same table. They have to make some kind of hechter. So, for example, each one can eat on his own placemat, or they put some kind of divider, some kind of thing that's not usually there as a divider between them. They'd also have to be careful not to share one keli to drink from, because particles of food tend to stick to the cup. All the more so, he goes on to say, they have to be careful not to eat from one loaf of bread, where one is going to be taking from it for his milchik meal and the other his fleishik meal. For the same reason also, you have separate, for the same reason also, you have separate salt shakers or separate salt cellars, really, salt dishes, because sometimes you dip the food into the salt and then you're going to have a problem of boss of the hollow if you do that. Okay.